Okay. Good morning. I would like to call to order the regular monthly meeting of the Board of Respiratory Care Examiners at 9:01 on November 15th, 2018. Just as a reminder, this is a professional setting, and when we are speaking up here, we ask that you not be speaking back there. And when you're at the table speaking, we will give you that same courtesy. Board members, and everyone, please make sure your microphones are on. If you're here for CEUs, did you sign in? Okay, that sheet has now been removed. You will be expected to stay here the remaining time that we're here, and after I adjourn the meeting, we will call your name to make sure everyone is still here. We're going to start with introductions. My name is Tracy Kagan, and I'm chair of the board.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Dr. Leslie Easley, board member.
Michelle Hirsch-Schattenberg, board member.
Jack Harford, director.
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schoenberg, attorney for the board.
Since you're here and joining us.
I'm over there. Awesome.
Can you throw your introduction out?
Kathy Vernier, board member.
Thank you. Okay, we will start with approval of the consent agenda, which covers 2A up to and including 2H.
So moved.
Do we have a motion, and do we have a second for
second.
Approval? We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor of approval of the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes. All right, we will get right into the agenda, and we will
Madam Chair, while you're getting that, can I just make two brief comments about the consent agenda?
Absolutely.
So I did schedule our next meeting scheduled for December 20th. We only have, right now, we only have one hearing from October that's on that agenda. So if we don't get any more work, I'll probably end up moving that hearing to January. If you remember, it was a case, it was a high-priority case, however, the respondent has signed an agreement not to work. So it's not a safety issue as far as practice. The other thing is I wanted you to make note, another case that had been sent to hearing was on the consent agenda, that was Lawrence Baker. He was sent to a hearing back in October. Instead of going to hearing, he decided to sign a surrender of his license. So I just wanted to bring those two items to your attention.
Thank you. All right, we are going to go to the regular agenda, items 3, and we're going to jump to C, consideration and action on investigations of possible unprofessional conduct. And the board will call the case of C9, Emily Rook, case 2018-RCE-0067. You come on up to this table there, please. Good morning.
Good morning.
Bear with me here a second, please. Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-0067. This case involves Emily Rook, holder of license number 10152, which was originally issued November 17th of 2011, and the license is currently set to expire on June 17th, 2019. Her last reported employer was Life Care Hospitals, however, I think that hasn't been updated for a little while. No complaint history with us, no PACER search information found. The allegation in this case is that Honor Health reported a resignation from Banner Health on September 20th, and then with that report of the resignation, they described several work-related things that did not meet standard care as far as medical record keeping and following doctor's orders. The respondent has replied to the allegation. Her response is available in the report that starts on page 458, and she is here to address the board as far as this particular complaint.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being here this morning. We are at an allegation stage, so you will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know about this situation. After that, the board will have conversations with them, with each other, but not back and forth with you. Okay? All right, the floor is yours.
Good morning. Hello, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I have my notes on my phone, so please excuse me as I read through them. Regarding the first allegation, a refusal to follow and or implement a physician order causing delay in medical care to a patient, while I may not agree with the nature of the allegations, I do admit to forgetting to document an assessment of the patient concerning this matter and acting uncharacteristically unprofessional towards the RNs. During this night, I was covering various areas of the hospital when I got a call for a PRN, SVN treatment in PACU. I was fairly close to the unit, and I asked how the patient currently was doing, asking if they were distressed, and the RN had answered no. I asked if the patient was wheezing or short of breath, and the RN answered wheezing. I said I'd be there as quickly as possible, and I grabbed the necessary equipment. I went straight to the PACU within a few minutes, and when I was approached the patient, the RN said to me, well, the patient was never really wheezing, but she was coughing a bit post-extubation, and the doctor wanted a breathing treatment for her cough. Another RN at bedside had an albuterol in one hand and Duanep in the other and told me to pick my poison. At that time, I did have an exchange that was unprofessional by me, having a bit of an attitude to the nurses. I said I preferred to assess my patients before administering drugs if the patient wasn't showing signs of distress or immediate need. I was able to turn down the patient's oxygen on her nasal cannula with her SATs maintaining 100%. The patient was wrapped head to toe in warm blankets. She was shaking very hard after coming off the anesthetic. Respiratory rate was normal. Heart rate was around 125 or higher. I listened to her anteriorly, and she sounded clear with slight diminishment in her bases. The patient had a normal breathing pattern and no noted coughing or bronchospasm. I told the RN at the time they could return the medicine because the patient didn't appear to be clinically indicated. The RN then stated, well, the doctor said he wanted it, to which I did unprofessionally reply, well, is this a stat order or is this a PRN? And the RN showed on the MAR that it was a standing Q4 PRN albuterol order, nothing stat or one-time dose order. I asked the patient, do you feel short of breath? Do you feel tightness in your chest? The patient replied, no. I asked if they felt like they were having any trouble breathing. They said, no, I feel okay. So I went back and said to the RN, the patient didn't seem to need the treatment. I was unhappy with the way that the nurses and I had exchanged our conversation, so I went immediately to my night shift supervisor, Joe L'Esperance, and talked to him about the situation. And during our conversation, he was called to the PACU, and after about 15 minutes or so, he returned to say to me that the nurses had complained about me as well, and the anesthesiologist. And the anesthesiologist, in Joe's words, had berated him in the PACU short of showing him his badge, quote-unquote. Joe did give the PRN treatment to the patient at this time, but told me the patient was not in distress, was not short of breath, and had some possible rhonchitis in the bases, probably something she needed to, quote, cough up. Joe and I then had a discussion about the events taking place, with me feeling like my initial assessment was correct, but that I had acted poorly towards the RNs, and that was a bad judgment call, and not appealing to the doctor's orders and concerns. I went back to the PACU at this time, and I did find the RNs, and I apologized for my unprofessional attitude. I was told by the RNs that nothing detrimental occurred with the patient. Also, during the time of delay of care, it was eventless for my patient. It was my night to go home early. We've had low patient census. So I did go home, and I forgot to make my assessment of the patient and the situation that occurred. My understanding was the second allegation was discontinuing a BiPAP order without a physician's order. And I believe to the best of my ability, I've been following our protocol. We have a assess and treat protocol that includes a reassessment if necessary and changing frequencies and or orders as the patient needs change. I've received a report on a patient who had a reassessment due that evening, but they've been refusing the BiPAP order for a few days or possibly even a week. When I reassessed the patient, they declined using the BiPAP or using anything like it at home or ever having a sleep study done. I looked under the chart and could not find a reason why they would still be on it, other than upon arrival at the ER, they had a slightly hypoxic ABG result. The patient said they had tried to use it in the ER, but they hated it and hadn't worn it since. And under the impression that I was following the protocol correctly, I documented the reassessment, the patient statements, my reasons for doing such, and I discontinued the BiPAP order under the physician name who had ordered the reassessment of the patient. I took the BiPAP machine out of the patient's room, and the patient had an uneventful night. Anyone who has worked with me will say that one of my biggest strengths is my patient advocacy. I believe that in order not being a jaded respiratory therapist or healthcare worker, my motto is you have to treat everyone like their family. It's the only way to feel like really treat people the way they deserve to be treated. I would never deny treatment to a patient, despite a physician, or purposely defy orders. I do assess each patient and their situation to determine their needs, and I use the skills I've been taught to give my patients the best possible care I can. So I ask you to please take this into consideration when discussing the nature of these events, and thank you again for your time today.
Okay, thank you. Board members, no conversation with her, just amongst ourselves.
I'd like to see the assess and treat protocol.
That's exactly what I was thinking, and we don't have that in our information here.
I was not under the impression that that was applicable to positive pressure ventilation.
Well, and yeah, I would like to see it too. Does an assess and treat protocol require a doctor to ask for the protocol to be done?
It has to be ordered.
Right.
It has to be ordered, yeah.
Anything we do requires an order.
But she had a standing order in PACU.
For a PRN, which she went and assessed the patient, and her words were that the patient was not wheezing, did not appear to be in distress. Mm-hmm. But you had an order from an anesthesiologist
right.
that said, I want it.
You do it.
I want to see the protocol. Yeah. So I'm going to motion that we move to an informal interview. And I request board staff to obtain copies of the assess and treat protocol from the facility, as well as there are standards of care policy. Would that outline? Let's just go with the assess and treat protocol.
Let's start with that.
Yep.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Do you have any other discussion? All in favor of going to an informal interview and getting the treat and assess protocol, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes.
So what RCP work, what the board has done is they sent this to the next step of review in our process. So they've also asked for us to get some records from the hospital. So this was scheduled for a future meeting. We'll have the protocols that they request, patient records, that sort of thing. And at that time, you get that notification letter, you'll be able to ask for more information from us. I think we talked about that or emailed that and go on. So that's what the board decision is at this point. Thank you for coming down today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, staying in 3C. We will go to 3C11, and the board will call the case of Gary Sproul. Did I say it right?
Sproul.
Case 2018-RCE-0059. Come on up.
Good morning. Thank you for coming down today. Good
morning.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 3841. This is case number 2018-RCE-0059 concerning RCP Gary Sproul, holder of license number 4401. This license was originally issued December 19th, 1996, currently set to expire on April 12th of 2020. Last employment reported was Valley Respiratory Services, no complaint history or no PACER search information was found. In short, RCP's role was randomly audited. He was short 1/2 hour of the required 20 hours. We have not received a response to the initial allegation in this particular matter, but he did respond and send in the CE in a timely manner when the audit started.
And he was half half an hour short. Yep. Can you tell me what page this starts on?
This starts with page 577.
Thank you.
Before, can I ask the staff a question? So we did offer a standard consent?
Yes.
And there was just no response to it?
Not that I recall.
Okay. Thank you for being here. As of the last one, you will have... You will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know. After that, we will talk with each other, but we can't talk back and forth to you. Okay? Go ahead.
I understand. The 20 CEUs, 20.5 is what I originally got, and I was unable to retrieve that one CEU. It goes through Phillips Respironics through Genosco, which is a third party, and they were unable to pull it. We have a transition between the supervisors, so I don't know if they're supposed to submit it. I submit it. There was a time frame I was unaware of that's come and gone, and now I'm unable to treat that CEU. So that's pretty much the crux of the biscuit on that.
Okay. Board members? So we are at an allegation, so we can offer things, but we can't mandate anything at this point.
Suggestion on a motion is to offer the standard consent agreement for continuing education pursuant to the policy. And if that's not signed, we hold it in a formal interview at a future time.
So, if I'm understanding correctly, he did submit additional CE, but it was not taken during his licensing
period.
There
was one unit that was outside of their time frame.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we offer the standard consent and that if not signed, we move to an informal.
Do we need to state the civil penalty?
Under the standard, it's $25 per unit, so it would be $12.50.
With the standard civil penalty, not
correct.
$20.
Correct.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second for that. Any discussion? All in favor of offering the standard consent, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
Okay. So the board is offering you an agreement. So it's non-disciplinary. It just says you're going to have X amount of days to produce one more unit and pay the fine, which is only going to be $12.50. When you get that, staff will send that to you by email or mail. How do you,
Both.
You'll have a certain amount of days to sign it and return it. Otherwise, this will move forward to another stage of the disciplinary. Okay. So it's a non-disciplinary agreement that he's going to send to you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here.
Appreciate it. Do I need to check out with him?
Okay. No, you're good to go if you'd like. You can stay if you'd like.
Have a good day. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Someone on the agenda? Okay. All right, we will just jump back to the top of C1, and we will call the case of Osvaldo Garcia Esquivel, case 2018-RCE-0075.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is also, there's some information in on page 59, which was... we can go into executive session if you need to discuss the document that's in there.
Okay.
This particular matter is with Osvaldo Garcia Esquivel, holder of license number 11742. This is case number 2018-RCE-0075. RCP Garcia Esquivel has been licensed with us since November 4th, 2015. That license is currently set to expire on June 12th of 2019. The last reported employer was somebody, was Sabaro, I think. I don't think that's healthcare related. Not sure. Does have a complaint history with us. And there is was a PACER hit for a criminal matter, which was also the prior complaint history that was reviewed with us at the time of his initial application. Hacienda Healthcare reported this respondent's resignation from employment on October 23rd, 2018. There is a little more to the story. With that employment report, it details that he is a transportation RT, and he was taking a patient to the Arizona State Fair, exhibited signs of being intoxicated. During that time, he was seen by EMS at the State Fair. Those records are included in here. And turns out that after our investigation, we haven't found anything that indicates that he was intoxicated. He didn't have any drug screens done at the fair, and the employer was unable to order any or request any drug screens because he resigned. Further information appears that he may have medical conditions which were affecting him the day of this incident at the State Fair. The report also indicates that he's seeking treatment for those health care things, and he signed basically an agreement not to work until the case is resolved.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, any questions for Jack? Okay. What say you?
Where was the? You said that there was documents in here related to the EMS.
The EMS, that's what I'm looking for as well.
Yeah, they just came in, so I think it's towards the end of the. Let's try to find those.
I see. Okay. From the Arizona Department of Public Safety Air Rescue Medical Mission.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, it starts on
98. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So it's like an intake sheet.
It's the EMS run sheet.
Right. Yeah. And page 99 is, what is that, EKG?
Yep.
And then also on page 102 is a written description of the interaction with one of the medics. I believe that intake sheet describes what the medical conditions are that he reported. The behavior that was described at the fair was that there was a family member of the patient that saw the RT. It supposedly has a cell phone video of this RT and how he's acting. Everybody around him was saying he appeared like he was intoxicated, like he was drunk.
Okay.
But I haven't found the EMTs or anybody else, nobody described that with an odor or anything like that. So it's not proven allegation at this point.
Mm-hmm. And there was no drug screen or anything done by anyone.
Of interesting note, when the board reviewed this previously, it was because of the DUI. I don't recall if it was alcohol or vapor or what, but that's what was reviewed originally when he applied for his license. He was convicted of a DUI, 2 years probation, I think it ended in 2015.
So what I'm reviewing, it sounds that there may be some medical things occurring with this individual. Currently, they are not practicing. Is that correct?
Not practicing until they're cleared by a physician.
Okay. And that'll stay in place
as long as this case is open.
So if we choose to close this case today, though,
that will probably defeat the
that he can practice
interim agreement because mm-hmm. the words in the agreement specifically state until this case has been resolved.
Right.
So we can't have an interim order in place until a physician clears him. We can't make that statement.
He is under an order that says until a physician clears him, he voluntarily relinquishes his ability to practice.
We need to resolve the case, so we need to. The staff recommendation would be to move it on in the process, and it could sit at a formal interview or head towards hearing. I know you don't like that.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I as your attorney, I don't know if there's anything here other than a question of is he safe to practice from a medical standpoint.
Right, but I have no documents in my materials
exactly.
that state
so,
that.
I think we should actually, we need to get records from his treating physician.
Agreed.
But I don't recommend moving this along until we have confirmation of whether these conditions are real or not.
So are we able to table it? Or
absolutely.
You can table this,
or you can move to an informal. The only danger of moving to the informal is he's currently out of the country, so if he does not attend the informal, this automatically goes to a hearing. And I struggle with the hearing.
So can we table...
Because he's been amenable to not practicing.
Right, we'll have to table it until we can reach him. Because you said he's not here.
I actually talked to him via telephone. He is unconfirmed. He's in Mexico seeking medical treatment, and his statement was to me he doesn't know when he's going to be back. He doesn't know when he'll be able to practice again. So that's why the consent agreement that was in place.
So I guess.
Did I answer your question? Okay.
I guess what I would recommend from staff point is finding out if he would like to do a voluntary surrender. On a medical, if we can get confirmation that it is medically related, on a medical, not for cause, but right. for the medically related, and then we can bring this back to dispose of the case that way.
Again, I don't mean to be contrary, but the staff recommendation is that you move this to an informal interview. We will seek additional records from physicians. I have one or two names in the East Valley. I don't like the appearance of tabling something which is a high priority case. So, that
but I don't know that I feel comfortable moving forward based upon the fact that all I want to know is, are you medically cleared to return to work?
And that's fine. That's my recommendation, and you've heard Frank decided it. And
ultimately, it's up to you.
Yeah.
So, whatever you would like to do.
Position of a physician, whether or not there's an actual potential medical issue here or not. You know.
Well, there's a letter here from Integrated Medical Management. This is the letter stating that he's cleared from a, looks like a nurse practitioner.
There was a previous...
it's a clarification, so I don't mm-hmm. know. It's a very weird, short...
It is different.
Different. Correct. But somebody made that determination, and a month or so later, then there's still an issue.
I believe he was on medical leave at his employer, mm-hmm. wasn't he, for a short while?
Yeah, the whole story with the employer has been convoluted, and I'm still not sure that we got all the documents, but what we have is here. So, and everybody I've talked to I've talked to one coworker, I talked to the supervisor. Everybody is concerned about his well-being, and they feel like they should be helping him more, but nobody is coming forward and saying, yeah, he shouldn't be practicing.
Except for him.
Exactly. So there's more to the story. They almost seem to be protecting him in a certain way, which is fine, but when it comes to patient safety... The
right.
position of the board is
right.
you don't protect anybody,
right.
no matter the reason.
Right. I think you could move this to an informal, and if we're not able to confirm that it is a medically, it was a medical related incident, I guess we just move forward from there. It's just
well, if we move it to an informal, just by the number of days, we're not probably going to hit December, right?
Probably not.
Okay. So now that puts us towards the end of January. That does give some time for this to kind of play out, and we may be able to get the documents we're looking for.
It's a board decision, whether you feel comfortable, whether or not you feel the evidence that we can get or have here, we have to do an informal interview. You always hear me say move things in along the process to save that time that you're describing. So I don't lose another 35 to 45 days if we review it in January and then decide it needs to go to an informal interview.
So my question is, what records are you, if you're trying to get records from Mexico, yeah, lots of luck with that.
Yeah.
And the individual who wrote this clearance letter or sort of clearance letter, he wrote a letter. You know, okay, so we'll get some records from him, and he says, yeah, he's cleared to go do whatever he needs to do. So I'm a little confused as to what it is that we're missing.
But that letter was written February or September 12th.
It was in September, correct.
And the event that occurred at the State Fair.
It was October. So what is it that we're, somebody, I don't even remember who it was, maybe it was Jack, who said we documents from his treating physician. Well, is it somebody who's treating him from the same group, or is it somebody new?
Or is it somebody in Mexico?
You know, who is it? I mean, we just can't, my belief, I believe clarity is always good. What records do we need? From whom? And what's the turnaround time? In the meantime, this guy's not practicing. So I get the time frame issue. We have them in court, too. You know, the Supreme Court says you got to move criminal cases along under certain time frames. There's always an exception. And this may be one of those exceptions. So I'm not as concerned as the about moving things along if we are missing things and then can make a good case along the line. My opinion.
I mean, what we have here from this NP is not helpful. It's short and snarky.
I got that, too.
This is an unprofessional letter that was written by this person. I'm sorry. I'm going to call that out.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So, you know, so I'm interested from the professionals on this board, what is it that, what can we get and to what end? Because I think, you know, you always want to make a good case and you always want to have the backup material available to substantiate or to uphold your decision. And so from whom are we going to get records and what kinds of things should we get?
So I know you asked the board. If you're asking me to investigate more, three things I would be looking at. In a telephone conversation with me, he mentioned he had a cardiologist in East Valley. I'm pretty sure he gave me a group name. And he mentioned one other health professional that I haven't followed up on, again, for his health care. And then there's also a social worker that was, social worker's name that was given to me by the director of transportation. Those would be the three places I would go to try to get more information.
The question we have to answer is, for me, is the behavior that was witnessed, is it possible that this was caused by a medical condition? And if so, does this medical condition potentially affect patient safety to the point where this person shouldn't be working?
The first question I don't have the answer to. The second, somebody's looking at me through the door, I apologize. Mm-hmm. The second question is, He's a transport RT. He took a patient to the fair.
Right.
He was unable to take that patient back to the facility. So the second part of that is yes. For whatever reason.
Right. Yeah, whether it was medical or non-medical.
Right.
There was something that affected patient safety. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I reached out and got the agreement. So.
We can't make an order at this stage, correct?
No.
Correct.
Not unless you want it to be for CE or
or a letter of concern.
You can direct staff to offer a consent agreement. I've just
consent here.
Can we ask him if he wants to surrender his license?
We can absolutely offer him a consent for a voluntary surrender.
Because he's already agreed to not practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what if we make that offer, and in the alternative, direct the staff to deliver records? We need.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
if he signs the voluntary surrender, end of story.
Generally, your voluntary surrenders are disciplinary when there is an open case. However, this board has had one non-disciplinary in the past that you designated specifically because their violations, while technically was a violation, there were extenuating circumstances. This, I believe, would also fall into that category because right now with the information you have, it's kind of not sure whether, you know, he intentionally knew about his condition and went to work anyway, you know, but he actually received treatment while he was there, so he recognized there was a problem. There's a lot of mitigating and aggravating factors. I guess I would need direction from the board whether or not they would like to designate it as a disciplinary or non-disciplinary surrender.
Personally, I think that would be a non-disciplinary surrender. I think that there are potentially some medical concerns that I would want to make sure that we addressed if he was to return to patient care.
But what happens if it's found out that they were not medical concerns that caused him not to be able to take care of his patient?
He wouldn't have a license.
Right, but then he's got a non-disciplinary surrender for not being able to care for his patient, which has nothing to do with medical. Do you know what I'm saying?
I have no reason to believe, though, that what I read in the EMS note did not lead me to believe that there was any concern for intoxication or drug use.
And even if we reached out to his cardiologist and the social worker and the other, I don't know what the likelihood that you find any information leading to you to believe that he was intoxicated on that specific day. Because I think the EMS was the only one that was on the ground close enough to give you any kind of insight.
Right.
Along with the witnesses that he was working with, and I'm not quite sure.
Well, there's the transport person, too, that took him to the gate.
She said she didn't notice any intoxication.
No
odor, and his coworker even said he was acting weird, but I can't say that he was intoxicated.
Okay.
And that could be due to a medical issue.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so while we can probably uncover his medical history, I'm not sure you'll get any more insight into that day.
Well, she did say, though, that, he was slow with his responses,
yes.
Had a hard time putting words together and making complete sentences.
Did
to me,
about his medication?
That could be a medical issue, but it could be somebody under the influence.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we talk about, they didn't smell of alcohol. Well, there are so many different substances now that people use.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
But we have no ability to screen
exactly.
Him at this point.
Right. Right.
So I'm leaning towards we offer the non-disciplinary surrender of his license if he does not want to do that.
Yes, yeah, so what happens then if he says no?
So
this moves along.
We would move this
to
an informal.
We
would move it to an informal, and I would request board staff to try and obtain medical records from his cardiologist, from his, you mentioned another provider that you had found out.
There's a cardiologist, a social worker, and then there's another healthcare provider that I have in a note someplace. It's not in this package.
But at this point, I'm not convinced, based on the materials that I have, that he's safe to currently return back to patient care.
Correct.
And he is, I believe, the last time you talked to him, he is currently being treated for something. So, I mean, I know that it's in Mexico,
but
hospitals are hospitals.
Right.
Yeah.
They have to have some sort of record.
Right.
And
you
can request those for us. Even if we can't subpoena them.
get them.
Okay, so are you making a motion?
So I'll make a motion that we make a request for a non-disciplinary surrender of his license. If he elects not to surrender that license, then we move this to an informal interview, and we will request board staff to obtain medical records.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion?
All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. Nay. But the motion passes. I'm a nay. Okay. All right, we will move along, and the board will call the case of Nikki Anspach, case 2018-RCE-0044.
Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-44, involves Nikki Anspach, holder of license number 3268. This license was originally issued August 31st of 1994, currently set to expire on August 3rd, 2020. We do not have a recent employer reported. Cases that you failed a random continuing education audit, did not find anything on the PACER search. RCP Anspach did not complete any continuing education when she renewed her license. Her response is that she's considering retirement at that time and doesn't plan to practice anymore. We did offer her the standard consent agreement pursuant to the continuing education enforcement matrix. However, she did not wish to sign that. An update as of yesterday that's not in this report is that she called me. I've talked to her numerous times, and she didn't want to have a mark on her license after a 25-year-plus career in the industry. And I explained to her the board process of review, the standard consent, and she basically stated that she wished to surrender her license. So yesterday I drafted up a consent agreement for surrender of the license. Frankie is reviewing that, but I don't have it signed and in place yet. So
would that surrender be for disciplinary or non-disciplinary?
Yeah, it's a disciplinary. Mm-hmm. Because we have a pretty significant violation in that she stated, when she renewed her license, she signed a note that said, I've done like 20 hours, that sort of thing. And it's unfortunate that after such a long career with no complaints, that she ran into this, but it would be a surrender for disciplinary surrender. So given that, the recommendation would be for the board to send this matter to a formal interview, offer the surrender if they don't surrender. If she doesn't sign the surrender or the
consent.
The consent for non-disciplinary civil penalty that we hold the informal interview.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the disciplinary surrender or consent or informal, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
Thank you.
We will move on to the case of John Bassett, 2018-RCE-0054.
I think we have RCP Bassett. Can you come up and have a seat at the table, please? Thank you for coming down today. Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-54, which involves John Bassett, holder of license number 10835. RCP Bassett has been licensed with us since January 11th of 2013. That license is currently set to expire May 15th of 2019. The last reported employer that we have is Mountain View Medical Center. We do not have a complaint history, and there was nothing found in a PACER search, public access search. RCP Bassett self-reported a write-up that he received at his place of employment on September 7th, 2018. RCP Bassett was written up for violating the Honor Health Policy Number AD-1800. Basically, documentation indicated inappropriately due to co-worker's medical record out of curiosity. The report also indicated RCP Bassett received training on the subject on two different dates, on August 8, 2018 and September 28, 2017. RCP Bassett did reply to the initial allegation within the appropriate time frame by self-reporting this matter on October 17th. He has not provided any specific detail that he did or did not commit the violation. Documents received from the hospital by subpoena provide additional clarification of the circumstances of the medical record access, and he is here today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being here. We are in allegation stage, which means you will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know about the situation. After that, the board will have conversation with each other, but nothing back and forth with you.
Okay.
Okay. All you.
Oh, it's all between. I'm sorry. I'm really nervous, but, for the allegation, at that time, I recently become charged of the, it was night charge for of the respiratory department. And one of the things the charge does is review a list of patients and make sure that, you know, the orders are appropriate, and we review if the patients receive oxygen, if they do, if that chart is placed every day. And I did access the co-worker's file, and I checked when I opened up the co-worker's file, that wasn't the actual name of the co-worker, and I did check if they're receiving oxygen and look in the flow sheet or to see if that was appropriate, and then before I closed that, I looked at the name and did end up clarifying that, oh yeah, it was the co-worker's where's it statement right now, I'm sorry. And then I closed that out, and I didn't think anything of that until the day that my director told me we need to go CHR, and then, you know, when they presented me that I had done that, and they were pushing that, saying that I was out of curiosity, I was, you know, nervous, and I said, well, I guess that's basically the kind of put words in my mouth, but I did receive training posteriorly to that action, and I did receive a write-up, you know, stating that it was a final and if anything similar to that happens again, then I would terminate it. I'm sorry that it happened that way. And thank you, hopefully.
We do appreciate the self-report, though. Thank you very much.
Board members.
I'm struggling to understand if he had reason to access the record, because if the coworker is a patient and the coworker is on oxygen, it sounds like he's reviewing the charges as part of his daily work. But what I am not seeking clarity on is, was the coworker a current patient
on respiratory services,
and did he have a reason to access that chart? And that I don't know.
Let's try to make this. And the reason I say we didn't get a lot of detail in your response is for this reason. Can you provide me or in the board to sign any clarification on that question.
Did you
access it for a business reason?
I did, at the time that I accessed this, because if you go through the list, in Epic, it says, you know, that there's an auction order, and the name, I didn't realize that it was a co-worker's name because it was going by like a second name, or it wasn't their first given name that's on the list. But when, and I looked at it, I looked at the flow sheet, I did look in the flow sheet, it said that they were on room air, but there was an order for auction. So that's the reason why I did access.
So you do this for all the patients under your care on the night shift?
Yeah.
Every night?
It would be, yes.
So if we went in and checked, we're going to see that at the same time every night when you get on shift, you're going to check all the patients that are under your care?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did that answer your question?
So I'm confused as to how this ever would have come into anybody's attention.
How did somebody find out?
The normal of everything that happened, then why wouldn't it even have gotten escalated?
I think we need to see if this patient had respiratory orders. It appears from the documentation that this has happened in the past, which is where we're at the final warning for, because that's not the termination slip, right? The final warning.
Attendance initially.
The final warning says he inappropriately utilized the medical record.
Right. But that's
is that the termination slip?
That's this event.
Okay.
That's step three. I think step four is your termination. So that's your final warning.
So then it would have happened again after this. The written was for attendance. I see that.
So what I heard was that this coworker was a patient. This patient had oxygen orders.
Yep, I heard that too.
Mm-hmm. That's what he said, yes.
And I heard that RCP Bassett goes in every night to check oxygen charges for every patient, which is not an uncommon practice for respiratory therapists. All right. But what I don't understand, if that's what is common, why did he get written up?
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, and if you can provide additional clarification, I would appreciate it, because this is one complaint of several that we've received on the same issue. So
yes.
You've got a bunch of health professionals that have all accessed this record.
That's true. We have another one today.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In those cases, we don't have that defining why did this come up.
Right.
Other than word of mouth within this particular area that it was accessed. So, for all I know, the coworker slash patient could have found out that his or her medical record was accessed because everybody was talking about it, and that's how it turned into this. Is that a fair?
Yes, that's a fair assessment.
So, after that happened and it was reported, then HR, somebody else did an investigation and looked at, well, who's everybody that accessed that record? And that's how we ended up with this in reports to us.
But if a person had a respiratory order, that's an acceptable thing that person would access.
But I don't know that we can say they did or didn't.
Right. Well,
the evidence that I had before me was that when this was self-reported, you know, and we did not receive any dispute in a response to the allegation or anything like that, that it was not out of curiosity. The documents you have in here, the write-up, specifically states that I have nothing else other than that to go on. Unless you have, unless you take into consideration the verbal that we have today.
I want to know, was there an order in the chart?
I kind of do too.
Try to get whatever you need. I mean,
there's a respiratory order in this chart, and RCP Bassett was on duty that night when this person was a patient. Then he has that's obligation to look at that chart.
So I'm going to move this.
If that's the role that
correct.
He's supposed to play.
Correct.
Right.
So I'd like to make a motion to move this to an informal with the request that board staff will obtain this co-worker's medical record for the sole purpose of identifying, are there any respiratory care orders, oxygen orders,
anything
that would be pertinent to the cardiopulmonary department.
And can we also ask what the standard workflow is for the staff? If the staff goes in and checks, I don't know, maybe you can speak to that. Is that standard workflow that you would go in and check?
Once a day, you're going to drop an oxygen charge.
Maybe we fall through the night shift because they're a little slower than day shift. Seems reasonable.
So you can speak to that, that would be a reasonable workflow for
To go in. And it may not be the same time every night, but at least once every 24 hours.
Can we request the audit from clinical informatics in regards to what specifically he clicked on in the chart?
That's what I was going to ask. Can you access what was looked at?
Because if he's looking at physician progress notes, you don't need to do that to check an oxygen order.
What's the term? Info what?
Clinical informatics requesting an audit review of chart access.
Is that a software program, or is that generally?
They can run it out of Epic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
do you have Epic there?
Yeah, he mentioned it. But it'll tell you exactly what he clicked on in the chart.
And what time he did it.
Yeah.
Will it tell you how many times he entered the chart?
Yep.
Okay.
It tells you every time somebody goes in.
Yep, that's
chart.
What I want
it's
to
like
see.
It's like a concern, or it tells
that's
you everything.
That's what we want to see for sure.
Yep.
But we just need the one patient record.
Correct.
We also need everything you look at that night.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else that anyone needs to see?
All right, that's my motion.
Okay.
Second.
That's a motion, that's a second. Is there anything else, any discussion or anything else you need added for Jack to find? Okay, all in favor of going to an informal interview and getting these documents, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Okay, motion passes.
First, you pass it. So the board's asking for some additional information from the hospital. So we're going to get that. This will be scheduled for another board meeting in the future. It's called an informal interview where they can ask questions of you. You can respond to questions, that sort of thing. It'll most likely take place in January. So you'll get a letter from me when that's scheduled. Okay. Right. Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions or anything else to add?
Sorry that I'm not like this.
No, I appreciate the report on the front end of it. You complied with the statute and sent it to us, and we're grateful for that. Thank you. Okay. We'll do it.
Okay, we will move along, and the board will call the case of John Grajeda, case 2018-RCE-0064.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-64 involving RCP John Grajeda. RCP Grajeda was licensed by us on January 4th of 2017, and that license is set to expire on December 17th of 2018. Last reported employer is Kingman Regional Medical Center. Don't have any complaint history or any public access information that was found. RCP Grajeda was self-reported DUI arrest on August 27th of 2018. The report was received within the statutory mandated time frame. He was arrested on August 23rd, 2018, charged with one count of DUI, slightest degree. The criminal proceedings have not been finalized. The next item on that docket is a pretrial conference that's set for December 3rd of 2018. A review of this particular licensing history indicates RCP Grajeda has a previous DUI on file from 2010 in California. RCP Grajeda disclosed a DUI on his initial application for license. That particular judgment mandated a 36-month probation with standard terms, one day in jail. And I say standard terms because I'm not familiar with
California, but it appears to many of the standard terms that we would have here in Arizona. One day a jail fines alcohol counseling, mandating, maintain maintenance of insurance, license, the bail laws, et cetera. RCP Grigeta did respond, and he's told us that he has hired an attorney. He's been offered a plea agreement. This is let's see, based on BAC level of 0.131. He sent us the plea agreement that he's received from the state. He states, like I told my attorney, I'm not an alcoholic. I do not drink every day. I work at two different hospitals. I have no time for that. But even if I only work 3 days a week, I do not just drink to drink. When I go out, if I did go out, it's to enjoy time with my colleagues, watching sports, playing pool, eating pizza, etc. But again, since this has been advised to me to accept the plea agreement and to plead guilty based off of my BAC levels that night, which I acknowledge is over the legal limit of 0.08. I will be enrolling in DUI classes, take a meeting with MAD Council, with the MAD Council, I will pay all fees pertaining to court, that sort of thing. He goes on to state his concern about his RCP license and gives some detail on his opinion about his license and how he is operating in the healthcare setting. I do believe I received an email from him, which may be included in the materials, that say that he did want to be here but was unable to because of his work schedule and the geographic distance to come down to Phoenix. I don't have anything further.
Okay, thank you.
So we have a second DUI that has occurred within 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's currently going to the MAD counseling. In his comment, he stated that he's going to be taking DUI classes and so forth.
Yeah, enrolling in classes and going to MAD.
Curiously enough, he doesn't say anything about jail time.
Right, so I don't know if this counts as a second offense in Arizona, so there will be jail time.
It wouldn't be a second offense. It's outside the statute.
It's a first.
It's a 7-year period from violation date to violation date.
So this will be
still first.
But I'm concerned that this is the second DUI you've had.
It's a pattern, yeah.
And
he's been on probation before.
My thought process would be that we would offer a standard order of probation with the classes and the counseling.
But we don't really let the court.
We would for first offense.
On true first offenses, yes. Mm-hmm. But if this
the
is
board feels there's a pattern of behavior, you generally
and
take other steps.
That is my fear, that this is now the second time that I'm aware of.
Correct.
Even if Arizona law treats it as a first.
Correct.
It's the second.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first one in Arizona.
His license is due in less than a month.
So if he has a standard order of probation, he can request that probation be lifted after a year, is my understanding.
After 1 year, they are allowed to come here for the board and back in compliance, and they can request for early release.
And if he's going to be going to the counseling classes, I think that would not be unwarranted by the board for us to request that we...
One of your terms is either their choice of 3 AA meetings per week or a round of counseling. As I think in the past, some of your probationers did not like AA.
Right.
So you do give them the option.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And I do think this is a little different than, yes, Arizona might see it as a first offense, but we acknowledge that it's not a first offense. We know that. Okay, so were you making a motion or conversation?
It was just conversation.
Do you have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we offer a standard order of probation.
Second.
So the standard order of probation is basically a 3-year probation. It requires quarterly reports from the employer. It requires random drug testing, three meetings a week. Update us when he's going to be out of town. We can call him at any particular time for drug testing, alcohol testing.
This has been adjusted. This is basically the purpose.
And I was just trying to describe that word.
Well, I think so, you did a really good job.
So, and I assume that your motion and the second is going to be if he doesn't accept the standard agreement that we would
move to an informal interview.
So that was the motion. Did we get a second?
No. I may have an old probation order here, but I don't see the alternative for...
It's not on that one. It's been generated on all the ones that have come out in the last year. So, yes, there it is an option. It's AA or counseling. So they can, if they feel that they have better success with a private counselor or...
So what specific kind of counseling language do we throw in there?
Let me...
Because depending upon how he answers the screening, there's any number of hours that can be assigned or not assigned.
I think, so it's either 3 AA meetings per week or 1 counseling session per week because it is one-on-one, and it's not like AA where you have to go to a group and... You may speak, you may not speak. So it was, I believe it was once a week. There was one previous agreement that was once a month. The board had agreed to that. Correct. So it's either
AA or NA, depending on the circumstances of the actions. The other thing is the, what's the car thing called?
Interlock.
So depending on, we've had those in the agreements where they've been required to have the airlock, and then we get the reports from
them. And that's only if we're workers.
Right.
This individual may not.
May not get that, okay.
Correct, because of his alcohol level and the fact that it's considered a first offense.
He's not going to sign this.
That's okay.
I mean, I'm just telling you, based upon his response.
Okay.
We're going to, and it might be better to have him in front of us to assess him and decide where he's at. It's another one of these where he's got a criminal arrest, but I don't have anything about patient care. So, but the public is not just patients. It's out, you know, out driving and so forth. Does the board foresee any reason to have his HR file to follow up on showing up late, absences, that sort of thing? I'm just asking.
No.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table. Did we get a second?
Second.
Okay, I was going to do it if you didn't. So we have a motion, we have a second. Do we have any further discussion? All in favor of offering a consent for the standard order of probation, and if that's not signed, we go to an informal interview, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. That motion passes.
Did any of the board members have a preference on counseling, the counseling term, or the treatment term, anything else that they would want in this besides what we use as a standard?
I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think
so. You're okay?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. We will move on, and the board calls the case of Ashley Hazelwood, case 2018-RCE-0066.
Madam Chair, members of the board, case number 2018-RCE-66, involving Ashley Hazelwood, holder license number 12109. License was originally issued on October 26th, 2016. Currently set to expire on June 19th, 2020. The last reported employer was Kingland Regional Medical Center. We do not have any complaint history. Does look like we have Pacer hit. I don't recall what that is right now. This particular case, Kingman Regional Medical Center reported that RCP Hazelwood was terminated from his employment on September 20th of 2018 because after investigation, they verified that he falsified patient documentation. Basically, we received an online complaint that he had falsified some patient medical records on September 17th of 2018. We sent a subpoena. We had not received those documents at the time of the writing of this report. However, I do believe they are now available in your packets.
You're talking about the patient level detail?
Say that again, please.
They said that they were sending a CD with the patient's charts. Is that what you're referencing when you say it's been included?
I was referencing the HR documentation.
Oh, yes, that is in here.
Yeah, I haven't gotten any CD.
And so this was they reported it or it was self-reported?
The facility.
The facility reported it. The fact pattern is that they discovered it. He got called into the director's office or HR. At the meeting, they were probably going to discuss termination. He submitted his resignation letter.
This is Ashley.
No, it's the guy.
It's a he.
Wait, are we on the...
It's a boy.
Oh, okay. I stay corrected.
So the HR documentation does indicate that he falsified some patient records. There's notes from nurses in there, that sort of thing, and he resigned before they could ever take any type of disciplinary action. The extent of it, I don't think I have I don't know if it's one patient, 20 patients, or the whole night shift, or I don't have a grasp on that yet because we haven't received all the records. Once again, we sent subpoenas out, and it's been like pulling teeth to try to get information back.
But I did see a letter or an email, I think it was, in here from the HR contact stating that the HIMSS department was going to be sending it on a disk and delivering it. I personally have a lot of concerns about this particular case, and I would like to make a motion to move this to an informal.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I want to know what your concerns are first before I decide.
So we have a respiratory therapist who, based on the nursing manager's investigation with that therapist, he supposedly lied, stating that he had provided treatment to this patient three times that day when that patient had been at dialysis, had nurses in the room, and this therapist was never there. But yet not only did he chart it, but then he physically said, "I was in the room." And it wasn't until the nurse manager threatened to pull surveillance video that he then came forward and said, "I was never in the room."
Okay, so...
So you falsified a record.
No, I get that. I understand what he's accused of and what he's admitted to. So my question is, we have this information now. What are we going to do with it when we go forward?
Well, I do want to see the patient records. I want to see what was charted. But we can't take any disciplinary action at this level.
And now, based on the
documentation,
he's traveling. So we don't even know if he's still in the state.
But a letter of concern isn't disciplinary.
But he still has a license.
So, no, I get that. So you're looking for discipline, and that's why you want to move it on. Is that what I'm?
Well, and I want to hear from, and I want to hear from the therapist too. They're available.
Because initially he talks about, it was like an inadvertent mistake, and then later on, it's like, no, there was actually
correct.
There was actually deliberate falsification.
Right. No, I understand, and he's admitted to all that. We got the whole story now, I believe. I was just concerned, as you had said, you had a lot of concerns, Alan, and so it's like, okay, well, tell me what they are. I'm not the professional here. I want to know what your concerns are. I get the fact about falsifying documents. Is there something else that we should be concerned about before we make the decision?
Well,
or do you just want to move it on because you're thinking about something other than what we can do here today?
No, my biggest concern is that you're falsifying a patient okay. record. I do have concerns about the leads in this facility not understanding that EZ-PAP is not contraindicated for a patient with a chest tube.
What's that?
Yeah.
If you read the statement, what they said was that the leads told the nurse that they would not do the EZ-PAP order because it was contraindicated with a patient with a chest tube. I have treated many open heart patients that have had chest tubes.
Right. And
a chest tube.
Lung expansion therapy is indicated.
Depends on the reason for the chest tube.
True. Let me rephrase. It treated pneumothorax, right?
Frankie, can a decree of censure be issued at this level or no?
No.
Okay, because it's disciplinary. Okay. So we have a motion to go to an informal. We have not gotten a second yet. Do we have a second for that? I will second that. We have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion? Okay, call for the vote. All in favor of moving this case to an informal interview, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Okay, motion passes.
Do you want staff to offer a decree of censure consignment before the informal interview?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay.
Do we vote on that now?
Yes, please.
Okay, so all in favor of offering a disciplinary decree of censure? As a consent for a disciplinary decree of censure, we're going to do a roll call vote. Start over here.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Leslie Beasley, aye.
Shonda Schattenberg, aye.
Catherine Ayer, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We will go to C6 and the case of Salvador Heredia Jr., case 2018-RCE-0038.
Madam Chair, members of the board, case number 2018-RCE-0038, involving Salvador Heredia Jr. I don't see the respondent here. This is a case that was postponed from a previous board meeting where he had been arrested and charged with four criminal counts. The board did receive a written self-report of this on August 6th of 2018. Which is past the 10 days. He appeared at our September meeting and advised the board that the criminal case was still ongoing and that it has not yet finalized. Documents received in here will show that he has signed a plea agreement for. I'm looking for it right now.
It's on 358.
Thank you, Frankie. He did sign a plea agreement. That sentencing, because that plea agreement was scheduled for yesterday, and I wanted to get it on the board meeting. I was hoping that he would be here to tell us what sentence was imposed, but he's not here. So I'm not sure if the board wants to or can proceed without that sentencing information. he pled to
one count
of aggravated assault, which is a class 6 non-dangerous designated felony, and it's also a domestic violence offense. And then the sentencing was not yet completed. So I don't know if that's enough information for the board to proceed on a final disposition with this case, or you want to table.
So the board has two statutes that would apply in this case. One of them is this a patient-related incident that gives you concern. or is it a crime of moral turpitude? Those are pretty much, moral turpitude is an unprofessional conduct statute. By pleading guilty, he is in violation of that. But the board can look at it from those two perspectives.
Board members?
There's also a narrative that was provided in here. I saw it earlier last night.
One of the things that we do not have, or and I have not requested yet, is I think one of the orders mandated a pre-sentence investigative report.
I think so.
And I don't have that. That's the where they go through the background and whether or not you're going to do it again.
The narrative of what happened the night he was or the day he was arrested, I think, starts on page 369.
I was just reading that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he did say when he was here this was a domestic incident. I believe the person, the victim was his wife?
Ex-wife.
They were separated or
yes.
Something.
Well, 369 is the indictment. The probable cause statement is on 375. That's what the officers wrote when he was arrested and taken for his initial appearance. Did you search Superior Court records this morning to see if anything had been posted? They might have had some sort of a minute entry or something in there already about the sentence. I'm not saying that they would have. But
no, I haven't. The minute orders aren't available through Superior Court anymore.
Okay.
So they're not, but I didn't see if those were docket entry or anything like that.
Gave him a 6-0, but after all that, something must have happened in the case.
I don't know. What
is the plea on 58?
I'm sorry?
What do you mean by 58? Something happened.
The plea agreement?
Well, he got charged with some pretty stiff felonies, and they gave him a 6-0 plea and dismissed everything else. I mean, you don't do that just because you feel like it.
Okay.
Right? Or that's you have like a victim that really wants to exalt the law or something.
Well, and when he was here, he made it sound like it was all going to be that she was lying.
And initially, that can happen too after going through pretrial hearings or whatever happened. I don't know. But, I'm looking for the written plea. That's the minute entry when he did the plea. I just looked at it.
So it starts on page 361.
Okay. No. Okay, there we go. So 6-0 means that it's a felony unless and until it gets designated as a misdemeanor. But he has the opportunity to earn a misdemeanor or a time of sentencing have it designated as a misdemeanor.
Which may have happened yesterday.
It happened yesterday.
If we're struggling to figure out a final disposition on this particular case, my suggestion is to, if you're contemplating some sort of disciplinary action, is to send it to informal interview and invite him in. And
by that time, we'll have information.
The document, the sentencing document should be available. Pre-sentence report, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because it does have some stuff in it.
If you're not contemplating disciplinary action, there might be another avenue to resolve it. That would be the staff recommendation. If you're thinking about disciplinary action, we need to move it on in the review process. If you're not, then you have what options available, Frankie?
The letter. If they don't want to move it, it's a dismissal, a letter of concern, CE, or a consent agreement of some sort.
Non-disciplinary.
Right. Everything non-disciplinary. Right?
Yeah, anything non-disciplinary you can do today. If you want to make a discipline, it's got to be by consent or based off of what you don't want or hearing.
Okay. So you have a motion?
So you reported to us late. So at a minimum, you didn't report to us within 10 days. That's the standard the board's been given on that as a letter of concern.
Didn't you say he was in custody during that time? Didn't he claim he was in custody once a while?
Yeah. And yes.
But
good memory.
That was true.
And I don't know what advice we've had for that. When they're incarcerated during the initial 10 days, what's the standard?
You're lost at 10 days. There's nothing.
It's not really our problem.
Right.
So it was 30 days. I don't think he was in. He was incarcerated 30 days, was he?
I don't know. I don't think he was.
That's not really the board's problem.
No, they're given 10 business days, which is 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the issue about discipline is this a direct threat to patients? My personal thought is no, but the other thing you said was, is it
a crime of moral turpitude? Which, it is,
yes.
But your statute is pretty specific.
No, I don't know what the board has done in the past being a newest member.
It's a committing a felony, whether or not involving moral turpitude or a misdemeanor of moral turpitude. So he is pled to a felony. So, yes,
so the answer is yes to that.
But typically, has this board done anything? I'm not quite sure. I don't think so. I think generally you always look at, is there a pattern of concerning behavior? Was there patient safety at risk? You've looked at multiple DUIs and because you're concerned about a pattern of public safety issues. That's why you go down that route. Most domestic issues, I think you generally let the courts handle them, unless somehow their conduct might be to the hospital setting.
I think that's a fair statement. As far as the past history, when going back 6 years when I first got here, the board was taking more action on these types of reports. But since that time, it's kind of more of an attitude of let the court handle it, unless you think it's going to.
Right.
If this particular case were to be reported on initial application, from the staff perspective, the court would need to see this. Because they reported it, although it's designated as a felony now, it may not be when the sentencing is done. This is not something that I would bring to the board as concern to issue the license.
Because you're not saying it's not being handled. It's being handled by the appropriate
people.
And I don't say that to influence your decision. I just, as a standard practice, that's kind of what we're doing right now.
Okay. Does that help anyone with a motion?
Part of my thought process is, although this was a domestic issue, are there recommendations perhaps that we would like to see anger management courses or?
Well, he's going to be taking DV classes. Statutorily, those are different from anger management.
So they're going to be in jail for a year.
No, that's a possibility.
It's a minimum.
Correct.
It carries a minimum of 1 year.
It carries
year
a presumptive sentence if he gets sentenced to the Department of Corrections. That's what that is. That's the range of sentencing if prison is imposed on the Class 6 felons.
So I think the first question needs to be, would the board make a different decision based on the outcome of his hearing yesterday? Because if the answer to that is yes, then we can't go forward right now because we don't know the answer to that.
But he's already pled guilty.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Would it matter to you what his sentence was?
Well, we can't put him in anger management if he's not.
Well, I need to know what happened yesterday. I have to answer that question to say yes. It probably would be different if I knew what happened yesterday.
So then if the answer is yes, we almost don't have a choice but to move on to an informal interview.
I can't make a decision on anything until I know what happened yesterday. Because if yesterday it was reduced to something.
Oh, yeah.
And he's court ordered to do things. Maybe in my mind, that may be acceptable.
So it's handled.
Yes.
Keep in mind that when we want to do something disciplined, we go to an informal interview. But that doesn't mean we have to do. We can discuss at an informal interview. Mm-hmm. So going there doesn't mean we have to discipline someone.
I'm not sure I'm ready to add more discipline until I find out what happened yesterday.
Okay. So do you have a motion?
I'm going to motion to dismiss. Until I hear from the court.
You don't want to dismiss.
Then I
want to
move on.
So you
can
table
it. You want to
do an informal interview? I can dismiss an informal interview if it turns out that we have no information that changes any of our minds. So I'm going to motion that we move this to a formal interview.
Informal interview.
I second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to go to an informal interview. Do we have any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed say nay.
Nay.
Okay, the motion passes.
We got 4-20. And I'm going to be seeking the resolution for sentence investigation report for your packets. I will agendize that two ways next time this comes up. Because if he doesn't show up for the informal interview, that kind of ties our hands. So it's probably going to be agendized two different ways if you want to send it back to...
Just as an FYI, I can't get the actual court order from the system, but it looks like he's been being sentenced to probation. It looks like there's a probation order.
There will be, if he's sentenced to probation with a standard DV terms, that's a lot going on.
Maybe we need all the information.
Well, it's just that the probation trips for a domestic violence case are pretty extensive.
Yeah, there's a bond exoneration.
He can come and answer to that about everything that he's going to be doing about what's going on, and then maybe.
So we're good with that one?
Yes.
We will move on to the case of Tracy Johnson, case 2018-RCE-0051.
On that last case, I do appreciate the court reviewing that and moving that on. Case number 2018-RCE-0051, Tracy Johnson, voter license number 12037. Last reported employer was Hacienda Healthcare, originally licensed with us October 31st, 2016, except expired November 15th of 2019. Hacienda Healthcare reported an invalid termination of employment on August 27th, 2018. She was reported for violating Hacienda Policy 2.5, Item 8, any action that may jeopardize patient care, place organization or client at risk, as well as Policy Number 2.5, Item 7V, which was any other action which creates an unsafe environment for clients or patients. RCP Johnson was found to have ventilated patients 022 to have a ventilated patient's O2 tube disconnected from wall outlets and connected to an empty E-tank while the patient was in bed on the morning of August 22nd. This resulted in an episode of respiratory distress that required the patient to be bagged for stabilization. The patient had a continuous O2 order that was not followed. Tracy was unable to explain to us why the patient was left on an empty E-cylinder when the wall O2 source was available. respondent didn't reply to the allegation within the appropriate time frame. She states, I am truly sorry for take full responsibility for this mistake. I made concerning patient MT that was under my care. However, there are a few discrepancies concerning the initial report. First, when I was giving the report, it was noted that the alarms were going off. This statement is incorrect. There were no alarms activated while I was giving the report. I was not present when the pulse ox alarmed. The RT did not enter the room immediately after I gave him the report. He walked away in the opposite direction. Next, I did not disconnect MT's oxygen tubing from the wall flow meter and connect it to an E cylinder. She goes on to explain the events of the day of August 21st and goes on to give a detailed description of her memory of the events that took place. I do not have anything further unless there's anything from the board. Darcy P. Johnson here. No.
Okay, thank you.
What was the order error? That's the one thing I can't figure out, because she states, I should have caught my doctor order error, and I accept responsibility for it. What is she referencing in that comment?
I was trying to figure that out. Because she said, in the beginning, said she wrote down half the order or something.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I wrote that down.
Where are you finding this?
She... 382 at the end of her statement, she says, I should have caught my doctor order error and I accept responsibility for it.
So did she fail to write an order? Did she fail to complete an order?
Could go either way. That statement could go, there's no way to know.
Right.
So I think it refers to towards the bottom of 381, where it says the order was to keep oxygen saturations greater than 93 on 40%. I wrote his ventilator settings to keep sats greater than 93. So she didn't, what my understanding is, in her own information, she didn't include the 40%.
So instead?
That she just thought she's supposed to keep them over 93. That's my interpretation.
Well,
where the order says
I don't know that we have enough information.
40%.
But right, it's interesting, on the ventilator flow sheet, if the order was to keep the FiO2 at 40%, on the ventilator flow sheet, she puts her FiO2 at room air.
2 liters and then room air, right? Isn't the first one 2 liters?
Are you talking about page 390?
Or was it a titration order?
So
right, first it says 2 liters and then
order,
room air.
I want a clarification of that order, because you can't keep them greater than 93 at 40%. What if you have to go to 45%?
Yeah. Or what if you have to go to?
It's
or what if you have to go to 30?
Orders. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or what if you need to drop it down to
30? And we don't have the actual order in
well,
there.
if you go to the respiratory treatment sheet though, it says continuous O2 FiO2 40% can titrate down but maintain sats above 93. So that is the order.
That's true. Yep.
No.
Okay, so they can drop it.
Yep.
So now I'm back to my original question.
the issue is that somebody put this patient on a cylinder. Or an E cylinder that ran out or something, who knows.
But if they're on room air, I don't know.
This person is saying they didn't do that.
And according to this documentation, even on room air, the stats are 98 and 96.
So what difference does it make if the E cylinder is full or not full?
Which is greater than 93%.
I'm not using it, right.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Right.
And she documented that it's on room air. It's not like she documented that they're on 40%.
Correct. And the order does say...
Have we had any communication with her?
I haven't talked to her, other than written response.
I think I need her to come explain.
To what?
I think I need her to come explain some of these questions. So when I read this last night, I understood it that she was terminated because she left a patient on a continuous pulse ox, on an empty E cylinder. I'm assuming they ran out of oxygen, her pulse started dropping, mm-hmm. and then it started alarming, and that's when the lead was brought in. But I don't know that I'm seeing any type of malicious intent or patient safety concerns. If you're documenting them on room air, you're documenting your assessment or the saturations of that patient on room air. If their sats start to drop, we'll put them back on an FiO2.
Right. I mean, we all know that that same type of situation can happen when your patient's on 80%. The order was written for 93% or 40%, but you could titrate down, mm-hmm. and that's what she's documented she's done. And according to what we see, the sats stayed stable and good all night.
I am concerned, though. I don't know what the comment means about the order error. What is the error?
The report from the facility specifically stated that her actions resulted in an episode of respiratory distress that required the patient to be bagged for stabilization. Are you saying that you don't see that in the records?
I don't.
I don't see that in the records.
Because okay. I see a ventilator flow sheet that says
so
something
obviously the records are not right, the record's been falsified, or somebody's not telling the truth. The employer or the RT.
Or patients sometimes have issues just because patients have issues. Because they're on a ventilator. Healthy patients aren't on a ventilator anyway.
That's I'm just reading the statement right. from the report.
So
I'm not trying to look behind it.
My question for this patient that we're specifically talking about, was there a rapid response that was called? Was there a code that was called that resulted in a negative outcome because this patient was placed on room air?
That is something that staff can talk with the facility about to find out for you.
If there's a record.
Because
that would tell me, if you had to bag the patient, are you saying that she went into some type of critical...
But there's no documentation that the lead had to come in and...
We have no documentation after 3 in the morning
after that story.
Right. Exactly.
We have her documentation that says she did everything
according to her order.
And states her comment that when she gave report, he was walking in the opposite direction. My guess is that this event happened after she left, and was the tank was found on the empty air afterwards.
Or
that's
the
my
personality
guess.
Of the therapist that took report from her didn't like what he received, and didn't. Thought it was something that he needed to do. So I need to see the documents.
I want to see the respiratory assessments.
Yeah, I mean,
if a code or rapid response document was completed.
I don't know how to, in overall, not specifically this case, but I would like to, I wish I had more experience in the field because I could try to get some of this stuff for you.
Initial review.
I have a question on this. So, because I don't know that I've seen documentation. So, like, this patient's on a vent, right?
Yes.
So, is it common to write FiO2 21 liters or room air? I mean, I see. Wouldn't you write 21%?
In a subacute setting or this type of facility, uh-huh. it's not uncommon to write, you know, 2 liters and. Because they bleed it in to
okay.
an LTV
okay.
ventilator.
It's bled in from an E-tank. Okay.
Thank you.
But in an acute care facility, I would expect a 30%, 40%.
Right. You
correct.
Right. And an analyzer.
Right.
Would be analyzed to a specific.
Right.
Percentage.
Thank you.
All right. Then I make a motion to move this to an informal, requesting the documentations that we just stated from the facility.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to go to an informal interview. Do we have any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. Okay, that motion passes.
Do you think the respondent can shed any light on your question? And your question to her again was?
So my question to the, well, my question to the facility would be, the statement is that the patient had to get bagged as a result of a quote-unquote error. My question would be, if the patient had to be bagged, where is that documented in the medical record that bagging occurred?
Would it be the day shift flow sheet? I don't know.
Right, when did it happen?
Or was it a rapid response sheet? Or
yeah.
And then I think I need some clarity from her in regards to what does she mean when she said I wrote half the order or there was a physician order error. I'm unclear as to what's included in that statement.
Moving on, we will stay in 3C and call the case of Brandy Olear, case 2018-RCE-0063.
RCP Olear has been licensed with us since September 20th, 2007. The license expires January 18th of 2019. Her last reported employer was Banner Health. Banner University Medical Center, Phoenix. No complaint history and no pace or search information was found. RCP Olear was arrested for DUI on June 17, 2016. She did not report the arrest to the board or disclose it on her renewal application. This particular case was received by us on August 28th of 2018 via the online complaint portal as a self-report. I'm not sure it's a self-report. I think somebody else reported her that had information that she had been arrested. Her response states, I'm writing this in response to your expressed concern regarding my failure to report an arrest. I want to begin by apologize for neglecting to do this. Given the circumstances, it was unclear if this incident should be reported to the board. All charges and any accusations were dropped. The case was dismissed per my attorney. Attached is any information I was able to find online about the incident. I have no prior occurrences, nor have I had any since. I hope that you accept my apology and that you will take this into consideration that I've worked as a respiratory therapist at Banner Health my entire career, and if there was never, there has never been any patient safety concerns involving me. I practice with integrity and with constant regard for the safety of my patients. Recently, earning a bachelor's degree through Grand Canyon University. As a result, I have advanced in my career as a supervisor. I hope to have the opportunity to continue my career and advance to make a positive impact in the field of respiratory care. Staff doesn't have anything further. We're going to get more records on this, but I at this time, I don't know who the arresting department is.
Island Justice Court could be Gilbert, PD,
right.
DPS, or the Sheriff's Office.
Right. And I haven't sent subpoenas for any of that. Yet, but I will, depending on what the board sees the outcome being. This is the only offense that I have found. And the case, it's one of these where the case just disappears.
So once it's dismissed, you're not going to be able to, I don't think you're going to be able to find much. It's been over a year.
I'm trying to figure out what the record retention schedule is for something, a misdemeanor.
The arresting agency will have more information.
The other question is will that information help the board if it was a dismissed case? It's 10 days from when you are charged.
So she got arrested.
Irrelevant.
She got arrested. It went through the court system and got dismissed.
So you failed to report, you got arrested.
Well, and if Jack can't find anything, it probably did get dismissed.
Oh, it did get
dismissed. Oh, okay. That's
the public record says it was dismissed.
Yes, okay. 51.
Here's what may have happened. Might have been filed past the statute of limitations.
So
crime date 6/17/16. Her arraignment was on 7/6/17.
From a legal standpoint, I think the only question here really is about the reporting.
Yeah, the reporting.
Because it is a dismissed case, regardless of why.
I'm curious if it was drug-related and it took a year because they were doing
drug results and what those drug results were.
It wouldn't matter, though. It was dismissed.
If it was an illegal drug that was in her system, it wouldn't matter.
Her charges were 0.15 or greater. They're not gonna check unless their policy has changed, and perhaps the officer knows. Unless the policy has changed, once you hit that threshold of 08, that's the end of the lab. They got a million cases out there to do their
They don't care what it is.
They don't care.
It's usually if your PBD comes back as, you know, below normal, but they're mm-hmm. still acting really weird.
Mm-hmm.
They would ask for the blood draw because they gave them that probable cause.
And that was that was a time issue. I thought maybe it was a crime lab thing where they did a long form afterwards.
Sure.
And
yeah, that can happen.
So
your statute is a committing a felony or a crime of moral turpitude. Mm-hmm. The commission is always as inside a conviction. You can't say they committed it if the court dismissed it.
But I can say you got arrested.
Your rules are to report.
And
you have to report. So there was a failure.
So the reporting
report.
Statute is completely different.
Right.
And
right.
that is from the moment you're charged, you have 10 days to report.
So there was a failure to report.
So it's 2016. I think it's pretty safe to say that she did not report it within a 10-day time frame of anything, whether
yep.
it was arrest or charging.
She might not have been charged at the time that she got one.
Even if she was charged with right before this was dismissed, we've still passed the 10 days. Failure to report is very evident.
True.
But that's an interesting.
But the legal, if she was charged past the statute of limitations, too. It's not.
We don't.
You think they would have waited to charge on a 0.9?
I'm just saying that's a possibility. Looking at the dates, or they may have filed it right under the wire.
Well, you also have a failure to report any incident that would
mm-hmm.
give rise to,
mm-hmm.
which is 10 days. So, and that's 10 days from whenever the incident occurred.
So does the board want to issue a letter of concern for failure to report?
Or a consent agreement for the 250, or just hold this over to a future meeting?
Or both.
For the hold it over to the future meeting because you're going to try and get more information?
Up to the board if the board wants to.
Does it change the information on the failure to report?
For me, it doesn't change anything. The case is dismissed.
In the past, we've
done. She didn't report.
Correct. I think in the past we've done the consent agreement for failure to report for $200 civil penalty of $250.
Mm-hmm. And I think if there is an argument that she was not charged,
right.
that's for her to raise, not for us to
right.
Right. I mean, there's no. We can speculate all we want, but
exactly.
in the end, there's no.
But if she didn't sign the agreement because she says I was never charged, then
mm-hmm.
she can come to the meeting and explain that
right.
she was never charged.
Right. Because she obviously was, because it was a case generated.
Yeah, right. That was my.
So I'll make that a motion that we offer a consent agreement for failure to report for a civil penalty of $250.
Second.
Motion and a second.
Payable within 90 days.
Motion and a second for the civil penalty. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion passes.
And you sent that to an informal interview if the
yes.
consent
oh, okay.
agreement
correct.
Is not signed.
Yeah,
correct.
If it's
correct.
Not signed. If not signed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just want to clarify that.
Who was the second on that?
Mine.
Yours? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. The board will now call the case of Emily Taylor, case 2018-RCE-0053.
You did that one already.
We did not.
Oh, we did
no,
Rook.
We did Rook.
It's
similar.
It was from
the same person.
Oh, we did Rook?
Yeah.
We have two Emily's.
Yeah. And it's similar to another case, but it's not
yeah.
the same person.
So, RCP Taylor has been licensed with us since September 23rd of 2016. That license is set to expire on February 10th of 2020. Last reported employer is Honor Health Scottsdale Osborne Medical Center. No complaint history and no public access information was found. RCP Taylor was placed on final warning, step 3 for violating the Honor Health Policy AD 1800. Documentation indicates that she inappropriately viewed a co-worker's medical record out of curiosity. In addition, the report states that RCP Taylor received training on August 16, 2018 and September 29, 2017 on patient confidentiality and HIPAA. RCP Taylor reported the report out
timeframe states, since this incident, I have been better educated by my supervisor on who does and does not qualify as my patient. This is my first year working as a respiratory therapist, and I misunderstood and thought that I was assigned to an area in which the co-worker was hospitalized, that I could view her chart without violating the HIPAA laws. I now know that what I did was wrong and take full responsibility for my actions. I looked at my co-worker's chart out of pure concern and to make sure that she was okay. I have learned my lesson, and I will not make the same mistake again. I don't have anything further unless there's any questions.
Okay.
So this is a different response than
it is.
I was reviewing charts to make a charge for oxygen.
Different person, different response. Different same person. Situation.
This is
same
a, situation. This is same a, I looked case. At the patient's chart because I was concerned.
Right.
That's unacceptable.
Right. Yeah, this is a HIPAA violation.
Yeah. There's a federal statute.
The other was saying, I was a lead and it was my job to look at oxygen charges. This person is saying, I didn't have any care, reason to be caring for this patient to open their chart.
She's been working for a year. Her prior date, 7/10 of 17, this incident occurred when?
September of 18.
September of 18.
Yeah. She says that I've been on our tooth for a year, so.
So I think in this.
This is very clear.
I think this is.
Pretty clear.
You violated HIPAA.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who works in healthcare knows is informed that. About HIPAA.
Everybody knows HIPAA.
Before you even start your job.
And gets yearly training, at least in the hospital.
And two of them she had before this incident.
So the other employee.
Correct.
And they went to the same one, I think.
There's more coming.
They must have.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think this happens at hospitals, or you know somebody who's admitted, and everyone starts peeking.
There's more of the similar fact pattern coming through. They just weren't ready for this meeting.
Oh, boy. So
perhaps
this is the time to make some statements about your obligations.
Yes. So again, I'm struggling with understanding this because it seems common sense to me.
Correct.
You work in healthcare. You're educated on the violations of that there could be significant penalties as a federal law.
All right.
You can't just go opening in.
You can't just look in charts because you're curious.
But it happens so much.
I don't know that it does.
This facility, it does appear.
Apparently, prior to
electronic medical records. And footprints and things like that. I think it happens all the time.
Oh, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's easy to just open it.
And I think it still happens, maybe a lot less.
Sure. I think that the nice thing that EHR has done for people's affairs, that everybody knows there's a record of them opening the chart. So you will hear people sometimes saying, I can't open that chart because that's not my patient. You hear people say that now.
And that's appropriate.
So this to me, this type of behavior requires a disciplinary response.
I agree.
So
at this point, you can either move it on or appeal. You want to offer it to consent for discipline. You can try that along with the informal interview.
What is the consent for discipline?
So it can
be
for anything.
Decree
of censure, probation, suspension. I mean, it runs the gamut, but if you feel that it would be a... The degree of censure.
I kind of like to talk to
her. Concern, so.
So.
Well.
Am I going to learn anything different by talking to her?
I know. Yeah, is she going to learn anything from talking to us?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think she will when she has a disciplinary action.
How many other things are you looking into?
Great question.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have hospitals that are now auditing for this. Do you remember Dr. Easley wasn't on the board yet, but do you remember the case that we had out in East Valley? Where the guy was drug seeking,
mm-hmm.
and he pulled up 200, 500 different patient records.
Yep,
absolutely.
That's different. A different fact pattern from this case.
I think there is that a lot of people are auditing now.
But people are auditing
to, unless there was a reason.
Because the feds are starting to crack down on it.
It's so easy to audit now.
Compliance committees at your hospital are monitoring.
And J codes going to get involved.
Well, I mean, and if you accidentally act as a chart, if you don't inform them right away and they catch it on an audit, you end up here. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, so I'm going to make a motion that we offer a consent for a disciplinary decree of censure. If not signed, we move this to an informal.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Roll
call.
Okay.
Go ahead. Alan Crawford, aye.
Leslie Easley, aye. Shelner Schattenberg, aye.
Kathy Rainier, aye.
Tracy Hagan, aye. All right, that appears to be all the cases, so we will go to 3D, which is discussion and action on executive director's report.
Jack.
Hello.
Jack.
Hello.
Jack.
Okay, so I handed out my first report out of the new Salesforce database. And you haven't seen these for a little while because of the transition in the database. This is going to merge into the cases that we have open. We'll be able to keep track of the aging report of how long they've been open. And when I finally got this to work, you will notice that the first case on there is in progress. It has an age of 168 days.
Wow.
Guess what? Mm-hmm. Staff should have had this case to you beforehand. So I've fallen on the sword, and I forgot that it was there, but that's why we have reports for follow-up. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's an issue. The allegations on license activity, you will see that at our next board meeting. Otherwise, everything else is, some of these aren't updated yet, some of these have been already closed, but everything else is within our time frames for adjudicating cases and getting them to the board of resolutions. So
what about the 177 ones?
Yeah.
Those all of them, if not, let's see, look here. All these have already been disposed of. They just haven't been closed out.
Okay.
So these, the majority of these, so there's one there, including that Jason Gale case. Days. So a lot of these have been resolved. The report's not perfected yet because it just hasn't all been updated in this system.
And what determines the priority, low, medium, high?
So your executive director determines that that's based upon the policy of 30, 60, 90 days for investigations. That's something that we put in place because of the Auditor General audit not too long ago.
So that doesn't have anything to do with the reason their case is being called, just the number of days?
No, I think...
Well, it does. What do you mean? The aging report?
No, the word priority is low, medium, high. What is it, the severity of the case? Or?
Yeah, so I'm using different language. Yes, I determine that. So, for example, if you look on the second page, the high cases, two of them, one of them which we discussed today was Oswaldo. That's a high priority. That should be investigated within 30 days. The medium priority should be investigated within 60 days. And the lows are 90 days.
So I guess my question is it a judgment called by you
yes.
on what's low, medium, and high?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
The policy gives a little more explanation on... it's all based upon patient care, whether
okay,
or not a
perfect.
Case can have
I
a
yesterday.
Health mm-hmm. safety issue with patients,
okay.
Or it's more of a de minimis
okay. that answers
continuing
my
education
question.
Thing.
Yes.
Everything continuing education is priority three. Yep.
Got
okay.
it. Thank you.
I can bring that policy back just for
mm-hmm. a bit. I was just curious. I'm good.
Yeah. But yeah, when it hits the front door, standard is I'm supposed to have reviewed it, issued a priority within 2 days of hitting the front door.
Okay.
Case is supposed to be open within 5 days of hitting the front door. The initial allegation letter is supposed to go out within, I think, 10 days. So it's all in order to keep stuff flowing within the appropriate time frames. That's why you hear me ask you to send stuff to an informal interview, because all cases are supposed to be adjudicated within, I think, 210 days. And that's a general, utter general kind of a response to healthcare complaints across the board, not just on our agency, but all of them. So I wanted to bring that up to you. I included the budget, just a quick budget's tight this year. I told you that previously. I'm projecting we're going to have about $1,500 left over at the end of the fiscal year. Just a little tighter. We're not buying much equipment or anything like that this year. Kathy, do you have some information that you would like to provide the board?
You mean in my report?
Yes.
Okay. On our application report this month, we have 86 applications pending. There was 29 new licenses issued. We had four late renewals. We have four late renewals that are pending. We had two late renewals that were approved and renewed. We had six applications that were closed past the 210 days. And we had one application that was closed on a 60-day renewal. There were no fee waiver applications, and there were no volunteer health service registrations this past month. On the licensing time frame report, the total of new licenses issued was 29, and within our administrative completeness time frame, out of 15, we were one. Out of the substantive time frame of 90, we were one. And with new applications, overall time frame of 105 days, we were two. Total number of late licenses issued were two. The administrative completeness time frame is 7 days. We did it within one. For the substantive time frame, it's 60 days. We did it in one. And for late applications, overall time frame, there's 67 days. It was completed in two.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is I included some customer satisfaction surveys.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring your attention to one of them. Because I don't know what it's about, I don't know where it came from, and I don't know why. It is on page number 602. Number 229. I wish I would have received some sort of reason.
I mean,
or
I saw that, but there's no comments to go along with it. So
no, just, that they're not a licensee.
They're not a licensee. Chalk that up as an angry individual.
Maybe somebody is just checking to see if we look at them. I don't have a reason for that.
Or they're checking to check on their license and they're not a licensee.
My feelings.
Well,
I do not like this, so probably good I don't know what it is.
I'm glad you don't like it, but when I see something like this that has no comments to it to justify,
it's 25 seconds is what they took to fill it.
Yeah, it's just an angry answer.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
Yeah. Otherwise,
6 minutes, 2 minutes.
Right.
We're trying to promote people getting back to us. We all have this on our email now. We're starting to get more responses, so I just want to put that out there. Otherwise, I don't have anything else unless there's any questions from the board, comments.
You have nothing else for your section?
I don't.
Okay. Then we will move to the call to the public, and the call to the public is anyone out in the audience has 5 minutes to speak to the board should you choose to. We would not be able to answer anything because it's not on the agenda, but that gives you the opportunity to say something if you'd like to. Anyone? No, I see heads. Both heads are shaking back there. Okay.
Continuing education. You're for continuing education.
Yes.
Great. Kathy will have certificates out to you within the next week or so. She's going to do roll call.
How about AF? Anything for future agenda items? Anybody?
How did we do? Where are we at with the PANP discussion?
The what?
What was the
being able to take orders?
About being able to take orders from a mid-level provider.
It's legislative.
Yeah.
We got shut down last year legislatively. if that's something that you want to
seek.
We wrote
a substantive policy statement, I believe, right?
No, you wrote the statute. I sent you.
Oh.
I sent language, and Frankie reviewed
those.
Do you want
it here?
We don't have statutory. The issue, we can't use one. We don't have statutory authority to say the industry can do it right now.
Yes.
They're
doing it. It's not a statutory authority. It's an interpretation of what you guys mean by orders from a licensed.
So Dr. Easley, bring you up to speed. Our statute is written currently that we respiratory therapists can only take an order from an MD or a DO.
Oh.
considering now that the industry is doing something entirely different. Yeah.
Right, we have PAs and NPs inpatient all the time who write orders for respiratory therapy.
Your statute is only MD or DO, but I thought that we were going to do a licensed independent provider. It's anyone, so long as it's within the scope of that license. It's a licensed independent provider. I just put, I can do something that's the board's interpretation of what the statute is.
Well, this is about a position. It doesn't even say MD or DO.
So
it's 13 and 17. So 13 is your allopath, so 17
is
your osteopath.
Yeah. I don't remember this discussion with a substantive policy statement for 5 or 6 years. So if Frankie is saying that we can do that, that takes out the legislature entirely.
No. You still need to. It's just in the substantive policy statements are in the meantime while the board seeks a statutory or a rule change.
It says,
but it has to be very specific. It has to be either this board's interpretation of something or that there is some sort of a discrepancy in the way the statute or the rule is written.
Okay.
I would have to check with my office to see if it's appropriate.
The terminology that we use, like I said, within the hospital is a licensed independent provider within the bylaws, set forth by the facility that you work in.
So my request would be that this board pursues
legislative
changes, and in the interim, I would be in favor of us having a policy in place.
I
learned something here today, so.
Let me discuss.
I agree, because I feel like we're putting respiratory therapists at risk with the way that it's currently written.
And I do remember we had a conversation about this, and I believe the board took the stance that so long as the person providing the medical direction is within their scope of practice and hospital policy, that this board would not find that to be a violation of unprofessional conduct while it seeks a statutory change, I think is the way that I wanted it to word it. But, Jack and I went back and forth a few times on this, I think.
No.
Didn't we? I know I wrote you something.
No.
I know. Move forward with the, there are in every type of facility, healthcare setting, there are NPs and PAs, some under the supervision position and some not.
Yes.
Nurse practitioners can practice independently. So
so
I think it needs, but depending on the facility, and some they can, some they can't. So I think if you say a licensed independent practitioner and within the scope of practice.
So they would have to be licensed pursuant to Title 32. It has to be within their scope of practice.
Correct.
And then it would also have to be authorized by hospital policy.
Correct.
It wouldn't just.
Yep. What if they're not in a hospital? What if it's an NP who's working at a clinic?
Then they would just have to be working pursuant to their license and pursuant to their scope of practice.
Right.
So, because by law, this board cannot enlarge or basically downsize another board's ability to regulate its professionals.
Right.
And by limiting medical direction just to MDs and DOs,
mm-hmm.
it kind of does that.
Right.
Because NPs and PAs have always been able to
mm-hmm.
order diagnostic studies.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I agree. I just did this for another board, so let me dig that up, and then I'll get this together with Jack.
Okay, good. Anything else for future agendas?
I'll start trying to find a sponsor. Given the elections, do we have any new friends that might help us in the legislature?
I heard our
this year
people's flip flopped.
Who?
Carter and.
What happened to Bartow?
Bartow, they flip flopped. One of them went to the Senate, and the other one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're still there,
That's good news.
I believe Senator Carter is now in the House.
No, she was in the House.
Or she was in the House. So now she's in the Senate.
they are no longer the chairs of their former committee.
They're not on health anymore?
I don't believe so, because now they start over with their hierarchy, and I believe they will appoint someone new this year.
Not to get a new selfie, Jack.
What's that?
Not to get a new selfie.
I still, to this day,
cannot. That's the rumor. I have not confirmed, but that's the rumor that they're going to
What's that?
They haven't assigned chairs yet. They haven't assigned chairs yet? Okay, so
Thank you.
It has not happened yet.
You still, to this day, can't believe I did that.
So we were in a, so we were in a meeting with Senator Bartow and introducing the board chair, and we go through all the courtesies of why we need legislation since we're meetings over. Out of nowhere, can I get a selfie with you?
So the backstory to that is I told him I was going to do that, and he's like, I dare you to. But then he really didn't want me to, but it was too late by
then. But then he dared you.
It was,
so I have a picture with her.
It was a really good selfie, too, by the way.
It was a
good
picture of the healthcare committee.
He was just like, oh, no, everybody was smiling.
It was
perfect.
Senator was like, yes, of course.
She was. Absolutely. Let's get in front of the flag, she said. All right, Kathy, you
want to
call names?
I know who they are.
Yeah, well.
Okay, Carl. And Dexter. Good job, guys.
Okay, then we are adjourned at 11:17. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, that's another job on that set.
What's that?
I have internet access.
Oh, good.
So they have a mobile.